Welcome to Speak for Yourself from the Crib, presented by Hyundai. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. Happy Monday to sports fans across America. We are glad to be back, ready to roll. All right, we got a great show planned for you. We're going to have Hall of Famer Rod Woodson. He's going to pull up. We'll talk some Pittsburgh Steelers football with Rod Woodson. One of my favorite coaches in all of sports, Frank Martin, South Carolina's head basketball coach, will pull up with him as well. But first, let's go out to Pasadena and welcome in LeVar Arrington, friend of the show, a regular here on Speak for Yourself. We're out to his crib. And gentlemen, we are going to start today by talking about Dak Prescott, one of our favorite topics. And I want to begin by talking about the Billy Joel song, Only the Good Die Young. That's what this Dak Prescott situation is starting to remind me of. If you remember, if you've never heard the Billy Joel song, Only the Good Die Young, it's basically Billy Joel trying to talk a girl that grew up in the Catholic Church, a girl that grew up in Catholic schools, into abandoning her beliefs to get with Billy Joel. He's trying to talk her up out of the panties and saying that, you know, hey, look, quit worrying about being a good girl. The good die young. That reminds me of Dak Prescott, who now is making a song, in my opinion, Only the Bad Get Big Contracts from Jerry Jones. He is singing that tune and I think is starting to change his behavior just a little bit. I had no problem last week with Dak avoiding social distancing and working out with Dez Bryant. But now TMZ reporting, Dak threw a big birthday party at his house for like 30 people. Ezekiel Elliott was there. Dak, of course, his camp is kind of denying it, saying it wasn't, you know, 30 people. It wasn't that many people. It was less than 10 or around 10. But you can tell by the food spread, it was more than 10 people. And this, to me, is behavior Dak Prescott would not be doing if his contract negotiations with the Cowboys were settled. He would still be Jerry Jones' favorite good guy, the guy that does everything right. His desperation, again, I don't have a problem with him working out with Dez Bryant. Like, but if he had a contract, I don't think he'd be working out publicly with Dez Bryant. I don't think if he had a contract, I don't think he'd be throwing this party and inviting Ezekiel Elliott and letting this thing leak out. I think the contract negotiations are making subtle changes to Dak Prescott's personality. He's living a bit more dangerously than he would be if he had the comfort of the long-term contract he was looking for. Marcellus, get us rolling. Do you think Dak Prescott's contract negotiations are changing his personality and making him a teeny bit of a bad boy?
Well, before I tell you what I think about Dak, I'll tell you, I think you're going to get big dummy today. I can hear Uncle Jimmy now saying, you looking at a food spread and telling us how many people at a party. I can just see that's just too much of a layup for Uncle Jimmy. So look out for that coming, Whitlock. All right, here's the real. Is now this personality of Dak Prescott an issue? Here's the thing. It's not changing who Dak is. It's just changing our perception of who Dak is, and that's on purpose. Think about it. In any healthy relationship, and I'm going to take you on this little journey, any healthy relationship, they say it has to be 80% love, 19% like, and 1% crazy. Because the other person won't fully respect you unless they know you can go there. And Dak was being a company man for 4 years. And then finally he woke up and said, you know what? That ain't how I'm going to get it. So to your point, I think there is a subtle change in Dak, but it's only for perception, not reality. So let's go to the next step. Dak at the Super Bowl. If I don't get a long-term contract, I won't be by the star. Oh, and everyone pushed back. Dak, you a company man. You ain't going nowhere. You going right to practice OTAs off-season doing what the company man does. So what does Dak have to do? Find ways that he can send out signals that he can buck the system. What does he do? He works out with Dez against the orders and the stay-at-home orders by the city, by the state, by the government. What does he do? He throws a party that looks like another disturbance and another situation where he's not exactly falling in line. I think this is just a masterful play of Dak to change his image so that the Cowboys realize he means business in this negotiation.
I don't disagree with you, Wiley. I mean, I think that's a fine take. Listen, I look at Dak in this situation, and I say, Dak Prescott is actually not changing. We're just paying more attention to Dak now. You know, last year when we were talking about these contract situations with Dak, there was the Amari Cooper conversations. But then it was real intense with the Ezekiel Elliott conversations because Ezekiel is considered to be the prime guy for the team. So they're holding court on getting him done, and that was where all the media attention was. Everything else was sideshows. Dak is now the main attraction to what's going on. And you got to keep in mind, he is now learning what it is to be a true franchise quarterback for one of the most well thought of or high profile franchises in all of the league. So I don't think he's changing. I just think what Dak is doing is Dak is doing Dak. And I'm not going to condemn him for doing who he is. And us paying more attention to him being who he is all of a sudden because of a contract.
Look, I don't want to compare him to Ezekiel Elliott or Dez Bryant. Those guys have had some real issues, particularly early on for Dez Bryant. And Ezekiel Elliott certainly has had some real issues. But I do think Dak is sitting around saying, look, man, I've done everything by the book, but I can't get the contract I'm looking for the way Jerry showered it on Ezekiel Elliott, who's had a boatload of problems for a time. Now, again, eventually the Cowboys parted ways and moved on from Dez Bryant. But Dez Bryant was treated very well when he was a Dallas Cowboy, and Jerry put up with a lot of his bad boy behavior and built a whole system around trying to protect Dez Bryant. Go all the way back to Michael Irvin. Jerry Jones stood by him through thick and thin and through all kinds of controversies. Jerry Jones likes or loves a bad guy or the bad boy a little bit. And to Marcellus's point, it may be that Dak, in Dak's ways, not the serious problems that Michael Irvin and these other guys have had, but in his little ways, trying to show like, oh, there is a line not to cross with me. And I'm not just a company guy. I'm not just a guy that follows every rule. I will drive 62 in a 55-mile-per-hour zone. And it may be the right ploy to get them to take him seriously in these contract negotiations.
Yeah, because Jerry Jones is a rebel in himself. Jerry Jones is a risk taker. If you've paid attention to his story, even for him to purchase the Dallas Cowboys in 1989 and people saying he overpaid for them. And not only did he pay for the team, he paid for the stadium. And every other owner was like, what are you doing paying for a stadium? We are in the ownership of a team, not stadium game. But he proved to be ahead of his time because now all owners are in the stadium game. All that means is Jerry Jones respects another person who bets on himself, is a risk taker, is a rebel. And I think Dak is starting to lean into, okay, if you think that the good guy is not to your full liking, I can show you that I got another side to me. And let's be real about the reports about Dak Prescott coming out of college. We remember that video of Dak Prescott getting knocked out on spring break and everyone was starting to question his character. And that took a little bit of a 180 when it got to the pro level in terms of being a company man, because it didn't map on to what we saw from Dak Prescott in college. So maybe Dak is starting to leak a little more of his realness to the world because being the facade of a company man didn't even get him rewarded. Maybe that's his mind play in terms of a calculation.
Let's just be real here. With this COVID-19 deal hitting, the pandemic hitting, thirst trapping has taken on a new identity. He has understood that he needs to thirst trap Jerry Jones. And he's doing it. Hey, listen, We're not having a segment right now talking about Whitlock thirst trapping with that shirt on, are we? We're talking about what guys are doing to make themselves more appealing to the general masses and to the people that they want. Whitlock knows he's a gamer. Whitlock knows he's a franchise guy. So does Dak. And all these guys are doing right now with their shirts and their food on tables is thirst trapping. Bottom line.
All right, let me ask y'all this. Does anybody, and we'll start with you, Marcellus, do you have a problem with if he threw a birthday party for 30 people, do you have a problem with it?
No, I don't. Look, a little trepidation there, but if you look into the detail of what's going on in his specific area, they're on a volunteer basis in terms of their stay-at-home orders. It's more of a, we're asking for cooperation, not mandating it. So it's a strong suggestion, but at the same time, it's not a mandatory requirement. Because of that threshold of it being a suggestion, not a requirement, I got no problem.
I'm going to say I have no problem with it. And the reason why I don't have a problem with it is to think that if they're congregating and they don't want to deal with the repercussions and the consequences of getting sick from someone else, I just don't think that they would be that irresponsible. So whatever that number of people, because it's alleged that it was 30 people. So whatever that number of people is that were at his home enjoying a meal. I mean, some of us have a whole bunch of kids. I got a whole bunch of kids. So I got a whole house full of people that I'm entertaining every single day just because I made them. All right. So but the reality of it is that as long as they're taking the responsible precautions in terms of what they're doing, I don't have a problem with it.
All right. I disagree with both of y'all. I defended him last week for on the Dez Bryant deal. I can't defend this. A lot of thirsty people out there. You know, there was some germ spread during that party. I'm halfway joking. I don't have that big of a problem with it.
You're not joking.
A slight one. I think it's out of character for Dak. All right, Ryan, hey,
what's Antonio Cromartie doing next? What?
Ron.
All right, Ron Woods is going to join us next from his crib. We're going to talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers. Terry Bradshaw says Ben Roethlisberger is the greatest Steeler of all time. Speak for yourself from the crib. Brought to you by Hyundai. More after this.
That's my dog.
All right, well, I'm back to Speak for Yourself from the crib. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley, Speak for Yourself presented to you by Hyundai. All right, it's time to pull up. We're going to go out to Las Vegas and talk to one of the greatest NFL players of all time, one of the NFL's all 100 team, Pittsburgh Steelers great among other teams, Rod Woodson. Thanks for joining us. We got some great stuff to talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers. The first topic brought to you by Terry Bradshaw, who said last week that Ben Roethlisberger is the greatest Pittsburgh quarterback of all time, even better than Terry Bradshaw. And that's despite some numbers that I think are in Bradshaw's favor. Bradshaw has one MVP. Ben Roethlisberger has never won one. Bradshaw, four Super Bowl titles. Ben Roethlisberger, two. Bradshaw, MVP of the Super Bowl twice. Roethlisberger, zero. Of course, Ben has thrown for twice as many yards, more touchdowns, higher passer rating. Rod, do you agree that Ben Roethlisberger is the greatest quarterback in Steelers history?
Let me start out by saying that I commend Terry Bradshaw for trying to pass the baton to a younger guy. I think he's trying to do the right thing. His yardage is, I think about if Terry Bradshaw played in today's rules, when they only threw the ball back when Terry played, 25 times max, 30 times maybe at the most, his numbers would be kind of gaudy also. But he didn't. And I think I respect that. But I think Terry Bradshaw is the best quarterback that ever played for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He's an iconic figure, not only in football, but in entertainment. He works for Fox Sports. He does a lot of good things. He's a singer. He has a show out here in Vegas, even though it's not going on right now because of the pandemic, but he has a show in Vegas. So, I mean, he is a very iconic person. You say Terry Bradshaw, and from all generations, you know who the guy is. It might not be from always playing for the Pittsburgh Steelers back in the day, but they know that this guy is entertaining. They entertained when he played on the football field, entertains in the booth on Sunday mornings for Fox Sports. And he entertains sometimes, like I said, the shows he have here in Vegas. So I would say, no, he is not the best player to ever play at the quarterback position for the Pittsburgh Steelers. It is Terry Bradshaw.
Well, I will agree with Terry and say it is Ben Roethlisberger. And Terry made it easy on me because he took himself out the conversation. And I'm glad he did. I understand that back then that the quarterback's usage rate wasn't as high as it is today. And they weren't fully maximized, just like running backs today are being minimized. But there are some glaring numbers in Terry Bradshaw's career that would give the edge to Ben Roethlisberger. One of them is completion percentage. I don't care how many attempts you have. I don't care what error you're in. If you only complete the ball 51% of the times, like DeMarcus Russell had a higher completion percentage than that. Now, I'm not saying, obviously, that they're the same, but there are some glaring numbers. Here's another one. Terry Bradshaw, in his first five full years in the NFL, every single year he threw more interceptions than touchdowns. Literally going into his sixth year in the NFL, who would even get a six-year opportunity, let alone Terry Bradshaw, the great, was going into his sixth year and had never thrown more touchdowns than interceptions. So if this was a real argument and we had to split hairs, I think Ben Roethlisberger would win this argument.
I think Terry's offering Ben a friendship fig leaf, a good gesture to try to restore their relationship because they haven't had a great one. I agree with Rod Woodson here. Look, back when Terry Bradshaw played, it was actually legal to play defense. I mean, you could actually tackle people. You could actually manhandle a wide receiver. You could actually hit. There was a penalty for a receiver going over the middle, and he got decapitated by a lot of guys. And so everybody's completion percentage back in Terry's day was much lower. I agree with Rod Woodson. Terry Bradshaw is the greatest Pittsburgh quarterback, and I'm a huge Ben Roethlisberger fan. All right, let's move to another topic. Antonio Brown, who was last seen working out with Lamar Jackson, and now I'm sorry, I went to the wrong topic. Jameis Winston, I wanted to move to. There are rumors that he would be a good fit as the backup for Ben Roethlisberger and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Rod, get us rolling here. Would Jameis Winston be a good fit in the Pittsburgh organization?
Well, let me start off by saying the current backup quarterback and Mason Rudolph, he is not the future for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think everybody knows that if you're a Pittsburgh Steelers fan. I think we want to say he was, but I think when we've seen him play on a consistent basis last year, it just wasn't the guy they thought he was going to be. Hey, Duck Hodges, maybe he can be that guy, but I think you put him on practice squad for a couple more years, let him keep developing. And my thing about Jameis Winston being a backup quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers, in his 5 years of being a quarterback, starting quarterback in the National Football League, he's thrown double-digit interceptions, 15, 18, 11, 14, and 30 last year. So the only way that he can be a good backup quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers or any other team in the National Football League is, man, you got to take care of the football. You can't turn the ball over and put your offense and your football team in harm's way on a consistent basis throughout the whole year. So if he learns from that and he shows that he can take care of the football, he can be that veteran leadership that if Ben gets hurt, they can go to if for the backup position in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, for me, it sounds good. It sounds like a natural fit, but I don't think he'd be a good backup in Pittsburgh. One, you have to look at where Jameis is in terms of his career. He's played 5 years, and he signed a four-year, $25 million contract as the number one overall pick. Great money, but not as a quarterback who's looking for his second contract money. So think about the context of this. Jameis Winston says, I want to go somewhere where the quarterback doesn't have a stranglehold on that position. Well, that's not Pittsburgh, because that's Roethlisberger's job. So then you're a backup who's already forfeited a lot of money because you didn't get that big second-year contract. So if you were to go to Jacksonville, where Gardner Minshew was the quarterback, you could dog curse him and root against him and hopefully take that job. But you can't do that if a backup in Pittsburgh, because it's Ben Roethlisberger. So you got to suppress too much real raw emotion. You want to get paid. You want an opportunity to get on the field. how great will you buy into that situation? So for me, I say it's a hard pass or no.
I'm going to disagree. I'm going to agree with Marcellus for a different reason. I think Jameis Winston's personality is the wrong fit for the quarterback room that has Ben Roethlisberger in it. Ben has matured. He's gotten married. He seems to be in a better place. But I just wouldn't put an immature quarterback like Jameis Winston into the same QB room as Ben Roethlisberger. I think Ben has moved on from the problems he's had early in his career, but it's like me and my eating habits. This is day 50 for me with a whole different lifestyle eating-wise. I don't need to backslide. I don't need to be tempted. Don't bring no chicken wings or anything around me because I will backslide. Same thing I would do with Ben Roethlisberger. All right, let's move on to Antonio Brown, the wide receiver who's out of the league, and there have been rumors about him maybe reuniting with Tom Brady in Tampa Bay. That's not happening. He works out with Lamar Jackson. People start talking about, oh, maybe he goes to Baltimore. I'm not sure if Baltimore is interested. It leads me to a question that I think is kind of obvious. And Rod, I don't know if you and how well you know AB. I would imagine you know him a little bit. Do you think AB is capable of being a good teammate anywhere in the NFL?
You know, first let me say that it's a shame that we have a guy who's so talented like AB, Antonio Brown, who has 841 receptions, 7-time Pro Bowl, 4 times All-Pro. He's 28 all-time in receptions already, that he's not playing in the National Football League. Now, some of that is, I mean, most of that is his doing. I can say all of it is his doing from Antonio Brown's perspective, that just think about, you know, what player are you going to get? Are you going to get the Antonio Brown for the first 6 years of his career or the last 3 years with the Pittsburgh Steelers? And that was turmoil, kind of inconsistent, very inconsistent in the locker room, personality showing up late for meetings, coming late for practices, all the above. And then all the other stuff, the beef with Logan Paul. I mean, how do you have that? You know, the last police video that he had that he posted himself, that if it wasn't posted, nobody would even know about. Maybe the police would have said something, but it wouldn't have been on air like it was with him posting it. So, you know, I don't know if he's matured enough, even though I love his talent. He is so talented. Unfortunately, he's not playing in the National Football League. I just don't know if he's taken ownership of all the wrongs he's done that he will change if he comes back to another NFL team.
Man, I think he would be a good teammate anywhere in the NFL. You got to think he's his best citizen when he's on a team as a teammate. Look at all his issues. And we could talk about his last years in Pittsburgh, still over 1,200 yards every single year, still beasting out of control on that Hall of Fame trajectory. So in Pittsburgh, whatever was occurring was being suppressed largely because he was in a situation where he was at his best behavior. I don't know what these particulars are, but we didn't hear too much wildfire out of Pittsburgh. You go to the Oakland situation. His biggest issue wasn't player to player as a teammate. It was an executive and calling him out his name. And obviously he was wrong in that situation. But once again, no felonies as a teammate. Teammates know a guy could get arrested off the field, come in the locker room. We like, you all right? Good. Let's focus on balling and we're okay. Antonio in New England never had an issue with teammates. He was there for a short stay. I get it. But we don't have the felonious record of Antonio Brown teammate to teammate. It's always outside. It's whether it's off the field, outside the facility, with an executive, with a coach. But teammate to teammate on the same roster, I don't see that list of issues.
Rod, I'm going to stay with the same kind of analogy here. When we went to Las Vegas, Marcellus saw me at a buffet, and I was like, hey, man, you're seeing the best version of me. This is me being a good eater here at this buffet. You haven't really seen me misbehave at a restaurant. Marcellus can see the good in just about anything and anybody. Antonio Brown on his best behavior is still a bad teammate. So I don't think he's capable of being a good teammate. Rod, thank you so much for joining us.
My guy. My question of the day.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib, presented by Hyundai. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. All right, time to go now to Darnell's crib in downtown Los Angeles. Darnell, welcome to the show. It's time for the question of the day. Take it away, homeboy.
Yes, sir. Let's talk about Ronda Rousey, who has stepped away from the WWE and just explained her decision in a new interview. Rousey says the grueling schedule interfered with her family life, but also took a shot at WWE fans, saying they were ungrateful and didn't appreciate her, adding, F these fans. After a short but exciting career in MMA and now walking away from WWE, I wanted to ask you guys, how should we remember Rousey as a competitor and athlete?
I think Ronda Rousey is a media creation. I think that there was a narrative that everybody wanted to have, that there was a fighter, a female fighter, who was the baddest person on the planet, badder than Floyd Mayweather, badder than Muhammad Ali, the baddest thing we've ever seen in the fight game. And the media was bound and determined to say it was Ronda Rousey. And turns out it wasn't Ronda Rousey. She got embarrassed at the end of her UFC career, stepped away to move off into this world, television, acting, wrestling, the WWE, and has now quit because the schedule was too damn hard. There was too much travel. Great little media creation. I'm a little harsh. I'm a critic, but that's what I think.
Well, you know what? I think that this is a classic case of a front runner's mentality. Now, I'm going to disagree with Whitlock in terms of it's just a media creation. Nah, she put in some real work. Her judo background and being in the Olympics and winning gold medals as a world junior, she was legit. If you ran up on Ronda in the streets, you felt it. You were going to go through some issues if you saw Ronda Rousey. With that kind of base, though, with all that tremendous success, Ronda Rousey got caught in a place where she finally got knocked out, not once, but twice, that she couldn't feel the love anymore. This is a classic front runner's mentality where all of a sudden the selective perception changes. They're used to being adored everywhere they go, even though, even in her high moments, she was getting booed by some people. Some people weren't all in on the Ronda Rousey train, but when you are winning, all you do is add up those wins. But when she started to lose, what's happening now, same reason why she walked away from the UFC, same reason right now. You start adding up those who are booing you and against you more than those who are with you. So only thing about this that makes me think it could be media is it allows her to do a heel turn and come back with a different image. But in reality, I've seen this happen with too many genius, prodigy, pioneering athletes. Is once they lose that opportunity of staying at the top of that mountain, psychologically, it's too hard for them to climb back up once they get knocked down.
I think, and again, I didn't follow this super closely, but I think she was a bit of a heel in the WWE. That was her character role and narrative. Where I agree with you is I don't think she liked that. I think she prefers to be adored and loved. Like most people, they want to be celebrated. I don't think she was completely comfortable in that lane. And then when you throw in, like, the job in the WWE is very, very hard. You are on the road. There's a lot more work than just showing up for the WrestleManias and the big events once a week. There's a lot of work that goes into that. And it's perfectly fine that she wants no parts of that and she wants to move into a different aspect of her life and be more involved with family. I have zero problem with that. What I always had a problem with, though, was mixed martial arts, UFC, just a brand new sport that we just don't have much history about. It was very difficult to judge her level of greatness in UFC, and we anointed her, and we were having conversations. Could she beat up Floyd Mayweather? And I always found that laughable. And so she has been a media creation from start to finish. And the WWE, I think, put her in a role she's not comfortable with, kind of as a heel, and she quit. Not surprising.
Well, it's interesting that we just had a conversation about Terry Bradshaw, and not to pick on him, but that era when football was new, you know, and they weren't using the running backs the same and the quarterbacks the same. But we excuse when we don't see the best results. But we can't do that in a younger UFC, even though it was already around for like 20 years. So the thing about it is, for me, Ronda is between the ears. I loved Ronda Rousey, not only for her background and her expertise, but how she was marketing herself. But once she got knocked down, don't forget Ronda, who used to be one of the best crap talkers out there. She didn't even want to talk anymore. She didn't even want to approach the game the same. And that's when I knew she got knocked off her square mentally. And this is just another derivative of it.
All right, we got to move on. Thank you, Darnell. All right, Frank Martin, the head basketball coach of South Carolina, one of my favorite coaches in all of sports. We're going to go out to his crib. Speak for yourself, presented by Hyundai. More after this.
That's my dog.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. Time to pull up again. Let's head down south to Columbia, South Carolina, home of Hootie and the Blowfish, and also home of Frank Martin, one of my favorite coaches in all of athletics, particularly college athletics. Frank, thank you for joining us. The head basketball coach of South Carolina. He's been the National Coach of the Year. He's coached in the Final Four. He's one of the most thoughtful and smart people I know. Frank, what have you learned, if anything, about yourself during this quarantine?
Probably sounds crazy because it's everything I do talk about, is that I've actually done a real crappy job as a dad to engage my children in conversations and kind of understand just how disconnected I really was from how they go about their daily lives. And my challenge here lately has been to reengage my 14-year-old daughter, to let her know that I actually exist, that I'm not a text message. I'm not a, I'm not a character at a basketball game that she comes to support. It's been an interesting month. And I'm extremely happy that this has happened. Excuse me.
Wow.
I'm happy that I've been stacked up in the house.
You just gave an example of why I have so much respect and affinity for you. You're one of the most honest people I've ever met. But some people watching may not know this. Frank and I go all the way back to my days at the Kansas City Star. Frank becomes a head coach at Kansas State. And the reality is, at least I can say this on my end, initially, I did not like Frank Martin. I don't think we liked each other initially. And so, Frank, when was the moment where you said, hey, man, maybe Whitlock's not such a bad guy?
Huh. Marcellus, imagine that. I just got in a long line of people that didn't like Jason Whitlock. But no,
right.
The beginning was interesting. Yeah, the beginning was interesting because I get named head coach, and all of a sudden, you weren't alone, Jason. There was a long line of folks in the media that just attacked me. And never gave me a chance for any of them to ever have a cup of coffee or an adult beverage with me. They just, you're a bum. You're not going to do any well. And it's okay. But I know this, you had a great relationship with my president. And you guys, he used to tell me all the time that, like, Frank, Jason Whitlock's a really good guy. I said, well, I wish he would write that way. But it's time went on. And I'm telling you where everything changed, Jason. A lot of folks in the media, you know, they put their opinions, they write their stories. Right or wrong, they go on to the next one. You came up to me and you said, hey, Frank, I got to tell you, I was wrong. And it doesn't mean I'm going to write nice things about you, but I just want you to know that what I wrote was wrong. And as a man, what can you ever ask from somebody else that takes ownership for whatever they thought was right or wrong? Now, when did
it's
I turn the page
point.
And get you on board?
Listen, man, at the end of the day, I'm always about the work. And it was your third year at K-State, and you took Jacob Pullen and Dennis Clemente and made a great basketball team. And it just blew me away. And then it becomes like, holy cow, this guy knows exactly what he's doing. He's a tremendous coach. And so my respect went through the roof. And you're right, John Weefall, the president of K-State, also helping to open my eyes about your character and what type of person you were. And, you know, from there, we were just off and running. Marcellus, go ahead and jump in.
Yeah. Now, Frank, I mean, look, you have a reputation. You're fiery, in-your-face type of personality as a coach. modern day Bobby Knight, some would say. Do you like those comparisons, and are they accurate?
I like the X and O comparison. I mean, heck, you can compare my basketball coaching ability to Coach Knight's, but at the end of the day, I kind of stand on my own 2 feet, Marcellus. That's why I respect you guys the way I do. You guys don't allow anyone to put you guys in a box as to what you should be or say or act, and you're willing to stand up and represent yourselves on this great show. And, I grew up in South Florida. I'm a football guy. So I bring a football mentality to basketball. That's the way I was coached when I was a kid growing up. And I ended up coaching for 16 years in the same neighborhood that I grew up in, and I still lived in it. So to me, it's about coaching people, not coaching the score of the game, being totally invested in helping young people move forward. And then the last thing I'll say to all that is, I used to like it when coaches, we all were allowed to show our personalities, because we recruit these kids. So we understand who they are. They understand who we are as coaches. They choose to come play for us. So I'm not coaching anybody else's players. I'm not coaching people that see me on TV. I'm committed to the kids that we coach and we recruit, and they're committed to me, and it's a marriage. We all understand each other. I used to like it when coaches weren't cookie cutters, and we all had a personality, and everyone was willing to show it and be themselves.
Now, Frank, I can see your love for football. You can see the helmets behind you. And as you said, you've been coaching for so long, over 5 different decades. How have you had to adjust your coaching style over the years?
That's where it gets interesting. And I think this is the biggest mistake coaches make is they get the opportunity to move forward in the business and get a job like the one I got or another university and they start conforming to public opinion to keep their job. And I think that's the biggest mistake anyone can ever make, because what gets us to this place is our ability to connect with the people that we're coaching, not appease the people that have public opinions on the inside, on the outside. Where I've had to adapt my coaching is the players. Well, the players don't learn like they used to learn, and they don't care how I learned. They don't live in my generation, in my era. But it's my job to understand how this young generation learns. Anytime you can figure out how someone learns, then you got a chance to grab their heart. Why? Because then they can they genuinely know that you're committed to helping them. You're not worried about the score of the game. You're worried about helping them. And when you can grab someone's heart, then you can challenge them. Then you can force them to grow. Then every once in a while, I can have that moment, because I'm an emotional guy where I kind of go a little bonkers. And then, when the game ends, my wife absolutely annihilates me. And then my mother calls me and says, "Why were you so mean to that young man?" Then I'll go in the next day and I take ownership in front of the team. And then it's for a moment that I wish maybe wasn't there, but it's all part of it. And, my biggest adjustment has been trying to learn how these young kids learn today. They don't care that they used to paddle me if I missed a layup. They don't care that we used to run 6 miles every day for whatever. They want to know that I understand them. And that's the biggest, because this generation, they have so much information. I mean, all I knew is whatever my mother or my coach told me. I had no idea about anything else. This generation, as soon as you say something, they correct you because they go Google it and get the right answer.
And coach, I'm glad you brought that up, because one of those kids potentially could have been this NBA sensation and collegiate sensation, Zion Williamson, grew up in your backyard right there in South Carolina. How close were you in South Carolina of getting Zion in that sweepstakes?
Yeah, I think it's better answered by him, because he would know. But we were in there. I was the last coach they allowed in the home. I was in his home for 3 hours. 48 hours before he made the decision. What an incredible human being. Everyone, he became a YouTube sensation because of these dunks that we're all watching right now. But his ability to understand how to coexist with others, to understand how to win, who he is as a kid, his willingness to accept instruction. You know, his father's a coach. His mother was a teacher or is a teacher. It's just a great family, great young man. And the best part about all of it is, and I think the world's starting to see this a little bit, how humble and how hungry he is. He's hungry for information, and he's humble that his teammates love him and everyone that comes around him loves him. He's an unbelievable human being.
Frank, people think I'm crazy when I say this, but maybe you won't. I saw Michael Beasley step onto Kansas State's campus, and to me, he's as talented as any basketball player I have ever seen. As much natural basketball talent as I have ever seen, compare him to anybody. Am I crazy for thinking that?
Absolutely not. He's by far the best one-and-done season of any player in the one-and-done era. Statistically, we had 9 first-year players, 7 of which were freshmen. You had a first-year head coach in me who I look back now, and I was useless as a coach compared to what I think I know now. He's unbelievable and just a great, great kid that was trying to find himself. And he just, you know, we just spoke about 2 weeks ago. He's still in that journey to completely be at peace with who he is. But what I know is this, when everyone on the outside world now is trying to say, you know, he failed as the second pick of the draft or this or whatever, didn't meet expectations. I know this, he's a heck of a father to his children. And that to me means more than any basketball accolade he can ever get. And he's learned that. And that, but from a talent standpoint, hey, Whit, I took him out of a game against Nebraska one time. He had scored 17 consecutive points. And I took him out of the game when he walks by me and goes, "What'd I do?" He said, "I said nothing. I'm just tired of hearing your name. Go sit down for a little while." So, and he just started laughing. He thought that was the greatest thing of all time.
Hey, Coach, we're running out of time, but because I know you're a great motivator, and we had Urban Meyer do this last week, and he did a great job, could you give sports fans a bit of a pep talk? We're all a little depressed right now because of this coronavirus.
Yeah, absolutely. Keep your heads up. I think the one thing we've all learned during the last 4 weeks is how much sports means to all of us in this society. All of us involved in sports understand the necessity that we have to coexist. It teaches us how to get along with each other. It teaches us how to not look at each other like being different, but want to understand each other so we can grow from one another. So give us some time. It's just a matter of time. This too shall pass. The reason it shall pass is because sports teaches us we come together during difficult times. And we've done that. We're starting to pay attention. Our great leaders will find a vaccine. And just a matter of time before we're lining up and we're going to be in front of each other and giving you fans everything that you want. And it's going to be a much better understanding from us, because the one thing I've learned during this time that I never want to hear anyone say, the players are not paid enough money, because what they bring to our families, our communities, our homes is unbelievable. And it's a journey that that we all want to be a part of. So we'll see you guys soon. And can't wait to get back on the sideline and provide some relief to everyone that watches.
Thank you, Frank. We're going to have you back again. All right, Uncle Jimmy is just around the corner. He's going to help us with our approval rating for Dak Prescott. Speak for yourself from the crib. More after this. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. Happy Monday. All right, time to go out to Uncle Jimmy's crib. He can help us talk about our approval rating for Dak Prescott. Dak's throwing parties at his crib with Zeke. He's running around with Dez Bryant. Uncle Jimmy, your thoughts?
Hey, man, you ever heard the phrase that snitches get stitches and sometimes gets holes blown in their britches? See, somebody had to leak the video. Hey, somebody had to leak the video. How in the hell else did we get a chance to see it? Okay? Who's got the most to gain? Who's got the most to gain from seeing Dak's reputation get tarnished like this? I'm going to tell you, Jerry Jones. See, I guess y'all forgot that they still in the middle of a contract negotiation, huh? See, Dak about to learn. See, Jerry Jones will do whatever he got to do to save a dime. even if it means setting your ass up. All right? If it means putting... who you think put the 200 pounds of weed in Nate Newton's trunk? Who you think sent the undercover agents down to Cabo to set Zeke up? Who you think gave Michael Irvin the key to the White House?
All right. Hey, wow, man, the internet's very hard on Dak. Has he been a dumpster fire? Oh, my son's not going to have that low. All right, we'll see you tomorrow. Thanks.